Welcome to the program for Friday, September 14th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, and it features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. We're keeping it in-house this week. This week it is my colleague Jason Miller and myself on the Federal News Countdown. It's good to see you, my friend. You have a lot of stuff going on.
Busy week. I mean, everyone said, well, wait till Congress gets back. Well, I think we got started getting busy before Congress got back and just continued along.
Now that they're back, we are certainly very busy, and we start, as we always do, with... The third most important federal news story of the week, according to you, Jason, is Jolie Lee's story headlined Agency's Section 508 Compliance Mixed Survey Finds. 508 compliance is what exactly?
That's the idea that agencies, but there's also others, but this one specifically around agencies, have to make sure that their technology is accessible to people with disabilities. Now, what does that mean? It means that the computers have, for instance, screen readers if someone is blind, or it has big enough character, the screens can get larger so that maybe someone who is not fully blind but has some vision impairment can see it. But it also applies to things like copy machines and printers. So anything that's technology related, and it goes more broadly than that, but let's stick with technology for now, meets certain standards that have developed. The reason why this story I think is so important is I think twofold. Number one, this is the first survey that they've actually gotten out the door and made public since 2003, 9 years, and this law has been in the books for more than a decade, more than 15 years. And the point is that they finally got it out. We finally can get a chance to see how agencies are doing, because this is not just a law. This is not just a regulation or a policy. This is the law. Section 508 says agencies must meet Section 508 standards. And in fact, they must call out for them in their procurements too. And what I've heard over the years is they have not been doing that as well as they could be. And I think, you know, a lot of people it's unfair to people who have disabilities that they're not being treated fairly. It's like, you know, you probably remember decades ago when ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, came out, they started putting ramps on all the curbs.
Yes.
And once in a while you find a curb that didn't have a ramp. Well, if someone's in a wheelchair, what are they supposed to do?
That's right.
And I think it's the same concept now. Computers are so central to our life. What do you do if your computer, your software, whatever, does not meet 508 standards?
The issues here that are in this survey are pretty stark. Little more than 50% of agency components said they had established a Section 508 policy. That means that a little under haven't.
Right.
70% have appointed a Section 508 coordinator. That's a good sign. Nearly 60% didn't provide Section 508 training to their staffs. Less than 50% incorporated Section 508 requirements in procurement solicitations. So that means that even as they're going out and acquiring this stuff, 508 compliance isn't baked into what they're bringing into the agencies.
Correct.
That seems to me to be the biggest problem in this survey.
And that is it's in the FAR. Again, another policy you have to follow. This is not like, oh, well, please add it when you get a chance.
If you feel like it.
If you're buying something that is needs to be 508 compliant, you need to state it in the solicitation. Mm-hmm. Now, many vendors are smart enough to meet 508 compliance, but not all of them do. And sometimes they don't fully meet the intent. They may meet pieces of it. And there's a lot of good training, a lot of good testing that goes on, places like Education Department, VA. But at the same time, This is not a great sign, I think, overall. These numbers should be all in the high 80s, high 90s at this point. I mean, come on, a coordinator? You don't have a 508 coordinator? You don't have a policy that says you will support 508? I mean, this is not a new law. This is not like saying, well, we just passed the law last week. What do you have?
And to the argument of, well, a lot of these vendors are meeting it anyway, I would bet you that in the financial environment that we're in right now, if you're looking at your bid and you have an opportunity, you go through it and you go, I wonder if there's anything we can do to cut some costs out of here. Well, we had to add these costs in to make it 508 compliant, but they're not really checking.
Right.
There's not really, nobody's really going to make us do it. Nobody's going to notice if we don't. So we can take that out and cut costs. I bet you we'll see a lot more of that.
Well, I think that's a big concern for people, not only with disabilities, but people who care about 508, mm-hmm. because if they start taking them out, eventually it's going to get to somebody who says, you know, this doesn't work for me. I can't read it. It doesn't meet my needs in some way. And with the push to hire returning veterans, there are going to be more people with disabilities who need this extra technology, need make sure the standards are met. And so I think that it's going to come out even more quickly than maybe it had in the past. So I would think that the procurement piece is even more important than it has maybe previously.
Jason Miller's third most important federal news story of the week on the countdown is agencies Section 508 compliance mixed survey finds. My choice is Jared Serbu's story, which is headlined First Elements of DOD's Joint Information Environment Come Together in Europe. It's actually European Command and African Command are instituting the first pieces of this joint information environment, according to Jared's story. And this is really encouraging. This is something that the Pentagon has been at for a long time, and it appears they finally have their arms around the idea of creating one enterprise network for the entire agency to be able to use.
And I think that's key, because what they've found is that the last mile is always the toughest. So if they're somewhere in Iraq or Afghanistan, getting that last mile is tough. But if you can decrease the amount of distance that data has to travel, for instance, if the data is traveling from California and it's got to go to Afghanistan, that's a pretty far distance. But if you get a Pacific Command where maybe it's in Japan, a base in Japan is maybe has a node, and then from Japan to Afghanistan, that's a lot less miles it has to travel. Therefore, you get rid of some of the latency, you get the information more quickly, you get better tools to do the analysis of it, and that makes a difference in theater, but it also makes a difference out of theater.
Jared's story says the Pentagon's been working at collapsing the military's tens of thousands of computer networks into something that looks like a single technology enterprise. I can't imagine what continuous monitoring, the concept of executing continuous monitoring must be like on tens of thousands of networks. It must just be ridiculous.
Well, it's all got to be automated. It's all got to be pushed out. Now,
sure, but still, I mean, you still have all of those metrics that you have to be following. I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of stuff there to be paying attention to.
Well, that comes back to that data overload issue that I think we've talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. The other thing that DOD is smart about is, back in, I think, 2006, they put the requirement out that you had to log onto your network using your CAC card, the smart card. And I think that has made security better, and then that has made having so many networks bearable at best. It hasn't been, you know, there's not such wide open or such, there's less concern, obviously still plenty of concern around cyber, but not as much concern. And just to get back to your continuing monitoring piece, that I think that has really helped, and it's part of why there's been such a kind of a frustration with the civilian world that they haven't used the HSPD-12 card to secure their networks. And it's a little off base of Jared's story, but I think just trying to control that network, I think what DOD is also trying to do is by reducing their network is also going to become more secure.
The third most important federal news story of the week on the federal news countdown as selected by me is First Elements of DOD's Joint Information Environment Come Together in Europe. It's Jared Serbu's story, and it's posted now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, just like all of our stories on this week's federal news countdown. Number two from Jason Miller and me next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"The next plateau becomes maybe some of the more enterprise type of applications, database applications, email applications, as you refer to, collaboration type of software, being virtualized and run on that infrastructure from phase one." So the phase one doesn't just provide cost benefits of that 20 to 40% ROI. It also lays the groundwork for additional enterprise applications to be migrated to that shared infrastructure and provide a second 20% kind of ROI benefit for those particular applications.
To hear the Federal IT Challenge in its entirety and learn more about the journey to cloud computing, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Kaiser Permanente is proud to announce the opening of our medical centers in Gaithersburg and Tyson's Corner. These state-of-the-art facilities have hundreds of doctors, specialists, even a pharmacy, connected by the latest technology all under one roof. And they have 24/7 urgent care, perfect for those non-emergency emergencies. Like those late nights when your eyes won't stop burning or your stomach's churning, for monkey bar tumbles and babies with rising temperatures. Dehydrated? No problem. Feeling woozy? We're all over woozy. We can even help with chest pains. Of course, if you're experiencing an emergency, then make sure you call 911 or get to the nearest hospital ER. So stop in at either of our new medical centers in Gaithersburg and Tyson's Corner or at our Capitol Hill Medical Center. Come by, well, whenever. Our doors will always be open. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/MidAtlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Today's Human Capital Management Report brought to you by the Graduate School.
The Census Bureau is expanding a program that asks employees to assess their own job skills. The agency will use the information to craft development plans for individuals and put workers in jobs where their skills can be utilized best. Deputy Director Nancy Potok said her agency is also using a job rotation program that trains new employees in multiple departments. The agency sees it as an opportunity to develop future leaders who have a broader view of the Bureau.
Training. It's vital when optimizing your organization's limited resources. For over 90 years, federal agencies have counted on Graduate School USA to improve performance with mission-focused training. Graduate School USA offers hundreds of courses and customized programs to help your agency develop the workforce you need for present and future challenges. To learn more, visit graduateschool.edu or call 888-744-GRAD. That's 888-744-GRAD.
Voters are asking President Obama, what have you done for me? We want to know, what has he done to make the government better? On Monday's Federal Drive, we'll kick off a week-long look at the Obama impact, evaluating the last 4 years. We'll speak with regulations expert Jerry Ehrlich and the White House's sustainability guru, John Powers. I'm Emily Kopp. Join me at 6 here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every week features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. We are up to on the countdown.
Have federal managers been given the knowledge, tools, and authority?
Well, I didn't plan to do that. We're up to number two on the countdown with my colleague Jason Miller.
Should we sing number two?
Well, you can, but I don't think anybody would continue listening if you did that. That does remind me, though, that coming on Monday, we are starting a terrific series called The Obama Impact, and we're looking back at the last 4 years and the differences that the administration has made in the operations of the federal government. It's not a look at anything to do with politics, of course. That's not our style. But
it's all performance and management.
That's exactly right. And we're going to be looking at pretty much all aspects of the administration and the way that it's worked over the last 4 years, and that starts on Monday. Federal Drive will have features. You're going to be working on items. Our reporters, Ruben Gomez, Jared Serbu, same thing. I mean, it's across the entire spectrum of the station and across the entire spectrum of the government.
You know, we also are have a lot of good web items that are going to be out there. I think both Jack Moore, Jolie Lee, Mike O'Connell, our web team, is putting together several different stories and video slash digital features. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be a ton to look at, a ton to read about, and a ton to understand. And I think one of the best parts that's coming up is there's been a lot of stories about Romney versus Obama on Friday. We're gonna look at both their management agenda. We're still working with the campaigns to try to get representatives, but I'm confident that one will come through. And if not, we have some what they call surrogates at least to try come in and give us some help and give us what they think the future may look like around performance management. And let's be key here, that's what we cover.
That's right. And next week on the Federal News Countdown, people who are experts in that world will be counting down their choices for the three most important changes that this administration has made based on their likeliness of on the likelihood of them staying in place. Now, whenever we talk to somebody from any administration, not just from the current administration, one of the things they always talk about is stickiness. We want to institute something or make a reform or make a change that sticks that will last long after the administration leaves, and that's going to be the basis of what we'll talk about in the countdown next week.
It's going to be a fun conversation. I already know who's coming on.
It should be pretty good, and we'll talk about that later in the week next week. We're up to, on the countdown, the second most important federal news story of the week, and Jason, you chose the story about the General Services Administration reforms. Dan Tangerlini before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and the part of this story that I thought, and we talked about this when you brought it, first brought it from the hearing. The part of this that I thought was significant, but we don't know a lot about yet, is the fact that the GSA is essentially saying we recognize we have a surplus and we're going to not only look at the way the organization is organized and run, but we're also going to look at the fees that we're charging the customers in the government.
I think it's all a part of the idea of how can we be more efficient? Because if you look at what happened at the Western Regions Conference, yes, there were abuses. Yes, there was waste. But it was also about efficiency. And now people may be scratching their heads a little bit. But the way the organization was set up, I think what Dan Tangerlini has found, the acting administrator of GSA, is that it was just very inefficient. Regions had too much power. There's not enough oversight by the headquarters. And it's not so much about this top-down approach. But listen, one of his reforms is the changing of how the CIO office works across the agency. Well, if there's three CIO offices, one at headquarters, one at Federal Acquisition Service, and one at the Public Building Service, who's in charge? And if the Public Building Service, just for argument's sake, wants to buy something that doesn't match up with the CIO headquarters, CIO's enterprise architecture, does Casey Coleman or whoever is in that role have the ability to say to the PBS CIO, no, you can't do that? Or do they just have that ability to say, come on, please, I'll be your best friend?
Is it a negotiation process instead of,
And I think what Dan Tangerlini found was that it needs to be oversight. It needs to be accountability. It needs to have that power to say, no, you're not going to do that because it doesn't match up with what the rest of the agency is doing. And I think the same thing with the human capital piece. The chief people officer needs to have that oversight over how hiring is done, how bonuses are handed out, which was another big issue that the IG found during his investigation.
One of the things that happened, one of the conversations that happened when the Western Regions Conference scandal broke was a lot of people around town were saying, didn't somebody have to sign off on that or did approve it? And it turns out from the way that this reorganization and this top-to-bottom review looks that Dan Tangerlini did, nobody did have to sign off on it. And that's part of the problem, part of the oversight issue that you're talking about.
Because the regional administrators did not have the power or did not have enough oversight over some of the budget and other areas. So the budget people signed off on it for themselves, you know what I mean? Like it was this is a circle where there was no kind of, you had to go through several layers of oversight. It was just the one layer and those are the people in charge. And I think that's part of the change in culture as well that Dan Tangerlini is trying to get to. And you know, we've written a bunch of stories over the last couple of weeks about GSA, and I picked this one specifically about the how he was praised by both lawmakers and the inspector general for the steps he's taken, because it shows that there is a corner being turned, that there are positive things that are happening. So much about what people write about GSA now is so negative and how it's an awful agency. And I know for a fact from people who I've talked to that the morale is down. This shows that, come on, the light at the end of the tunnel is real and it's not just a flash.
One of the funniest comments I heard from somebody inside the organization about Brian Miller is that he's Mikey. He hates everything, from the old Life commercial.
Yes.
And so the idea that he was also at this hearing saying they're now headed in the right direction is a kind of a response to that, saying he doesn't hate everything. He likes what he sees here, and so did the members of the Senate that were holding this hearing.
Absolutely, and I think that there's still going to be a lot of attention being paid to this. There's more IG reports coming out around conference spending. I mean, the IG himself said we are investigating all conferences in 2011, 2012 that had more than I think it was 25 people and cost more than $10,000. I may have gotten the numbers backwards. But anyways, the point is that there may be other problems that come out still. But I think what Dan Tangerlini is trying to do is set the agency in the right path and to say, listen, that happened before. This is the after. You can see the differences.
Yeah. The idea just that somebody's paying attention seemed to be what Brian Miller liked more than just about anything else that happened at this hearing. Just the idea that finally someone with a lot of autonomy, very high up in the organization, is checking more than anything.
You know, and that's a shame that it had to take something like the Western Regions Conference to get that kind of culture change. You wonder how has the culture changed, grew up that way over the last, 30, 40 years. And I think, what was very interesting about the hearing the other day was Senator Claire McCaskill kind of hit the nail on the head with the idea that during the transition from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, they had career people were in charge. And she says certain career people made changes that were never undone when Martha Johnson, the then administrator, took over, about the giving more power to the regions. And when nothing changed, things kind of grew out of control more quickly from there. No one is going to say it's just because of that one thing, but she points to that. And I heard that before, that there was changes being made by certain people out in the regions and certain acting positions, but it was always very difficult to confirm if that was really the case. She seems to point to it. Yes, it is. And I think by Dan Tangerlini, again, bringing things in back from the regions, the HR, the IT, the budget, he's making the change that maybe Martha Johnson should have made in early 2009, 2010 after she was confirmed.
Jason Miller's second most important federal news story of the week is his story on the GSA and the reforms and changes that Dan Tangerlini's making, and his account of them to the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. It's linked right now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back on the Federal News Countdown, my choice for the second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
The numbers mount, and so does the need of the more than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. They are coming home, and you can help their transition by joining the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 13th. It benefits the Wounded Warrior Project, which provides direct programs for our injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com. Or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Corp.
What about this? What about this? What about this?
Force 3 presents the world's most obsessive engineers. Today, it's John Kim.
Right now, I'm obsessing over how corporate networks can securely support BYOD, bring your own device. I'm thinking about it night and day. One minute, I'll be thinking about, like, my sandwich. And suddenly, I'm obsessing about how Force 3 can help iPad and smartphone users be on your network and take full advantage of voice, video, and all your business applications in a secure and reliable way. Force 3 teams with Cisco, VMware, EMC, and Apple to help you scale and deliver the performance and security you need to support BYOD. If you want to learn more, or if you just like one of our cool BYOD t-shirts, go to obsessiveengineers.com. I'm John Kim, and I obsess so you won't have to.
You can watch us obsess at obsessiveengineers.com. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a VMware Premier partner and is certified with a VMware Ready teleworking solution.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just a 6.99% APR, plus earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. And there is no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org. Annual percentage rate is based on evaluation of applicants' credit. SDFCU is federally insured by the NCUA.
Healthy volunteers. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. It takes more than trained specialists with deep medical knowledge to advance medical science. It also takes people who just want to help. The clinical trials that test researchers' theories often need healthy volunteers, as well as ill people who might benefit directly from the research. At the Clinical Center of the National Institutes of Health, the NIH's research hospital, patient recruitment lead Denora Dominguez.
Researchers need both individuals, those that are healthy and those that have a medical condition or a medical diagnosis, because we learn from both of them.
People who want to volunteer can review projects at clinicaltrials.gov. searching in studies with the term healthy. Volunteers always have the right to say no, of course, to part or all of a study. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by my colleague Jason Miller and myself. And my choice for the second most important federal news story of the week: court puts temporary hold on Stock Act reporting requirement. 28,000 federal employees, Jason, were going to be required to submit information to the Office of Government Ethics for any transaction, financial transaction, like selling stocks or buying stocks, bonds, commodities, and so on, of $1,000 or more. Then OGE would take that information and put it online. A number of government employees have to do this already, but this was going to apply to non-politicals for the first time. The Senior Executives Association and some other groups sued to prevent this from happening. And Judge Alexander Williams in the District Court of Maryland now says that he believes that the plaintiffs have a good likelihood of winning, and so he's issuing an injunction to prevent this from going into place. And I think this is a significant win for these groups who said, to their credit, talking about this long before the Stock Act ever was passed by Congress and signed into law by the president, that this is a really bad idea to apply this to federal employees.
It sounds like that Congress also understands that this is a bad idea. Now, will they have time to change it? I'm surprised that nothing was maybe put into the continuing resolution, kind of just a one-liner that said, we're changing this part of the law. But I think the injunction is I agree with you, is very important to their cause. And it'd be interesting to see what happens if there's an appeal that gets filed. Does the Justice Department come back and say, you know, we have to file an appeal? What happens next? And I think that's a big question, because the September 30th deadline that's coming very soon, you know, they're going to have to put stuff up online. I mean, obviously with the injunction they want, but what happens next is the big question.
Well, the speculation that I've seen from a number of different spots today is that between now and whenever the injunction expires, that there's a very distinct possibility that Congress will do something, that Congress will issue something. I can't say I'm as surprised as you are that there was nothing in the CR about this, because I think there was really a concerted effort, and we'll talk more about this in just a little bit, but there's really a concerted effort from both sides of the Hill to do absolutely nothing that ran even the remotest possibility that the CR could go down in flames.
But at the same time, I think there's enough people who believe that the Congress they went too far. People didn't pay attention closely enough, or they had some unintended consequences that no one really thought enough about. That's why I thought that the CR made sense. I mean, it's the same thing with the sequestration. There's a lot of people who thought that that would go in the CR as well. Now, mm-hmm. I can see that being much more controversial than the Stock Act. The other thing about this that really stands out to me is the fact that the way this story by Jolie Lee, this is the first time that I've seen it explained, where it's senior executives whose base pay is 20% more than the base pay of a GS-15 step one. I hadn't heard it explained that way. It was always explained as, you know, political appointees and senior executive service members. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, I think that was, it's a much clearer definition of who would be impacted by this.
The legal counsel for the senior counsel for the Senior Executives Association, Bill Bransford, is going to be on the program this afternoon in the 5 o'clock hour, around 5:30 or so, about 2 hours from now, to talk about this, to explain what this means and to tell us what his understanding is of what's going on Capitol Hill. So we'll get it right from the expert, in a couple hours on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. But the idea of this, these kinds of things fascinate me, Jason, because this happens from time to time on Capitol Hill. Something happens that Congress decides they need to address. They wind up casting a much wider net than they ever expected in the first place, and then have to go back and clean up what some people find to be a mess later on. And I got to tell you, when you have a district court judge that says these plaintiffs have a really good chance to win this case, so this has to stop, that means somebody really screwed up somewhere, in my view.
Well, I think it's just the reactionary nature of Congress. I think when you talk to people who spent time on Capitol Hill, people who have watched Capitol Hill over the years, they will tell you, that's just what Congress does. They're very reactionary. They're putting out the next fire or dealing with the next fire instead of saying, okay, well, what's the big issue? How can we address it? And if something happens, and you can look at the reactions of Congress over several different items over the years, that's how they do it. And then they have to go clean up the mess. And I think, you'd like to think that this maybe will teach someone a lesson, but
seems to happen over and over again. Those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it, as a paraphrase of the old saying. The second most important federal news story of the week, according to my choices, is Jolie Lee's story headline, Court Puts Temporary Hold on Stock Act Reporting Requirement. And you can read it on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news stories of the week from Jason Miller and myself. And the Federal News Countdown continues next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink.
Vice Admiral Manson Brown is the Coast Guard's Deputy Commandant for Mission Support. He says the service's new headquarters is taking shape.
It's going to be ready for occupancy next summer, so we've laid down track lines to start the move on or about 1 August of 2013. We're essentially moving 300 people every week, and so it's going to take us about 4 months to move our 3,700 employees.
Agency of the Month, Tuesday afternoons at 3 in September on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With CenturyLink's comprehensive suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
$1.2 trillion in across-the-board spending cuts are set to hit federal agencies starting January 2nd. What programs will be affected, and how are agencies preparing? Will federal employees be furloughed? And how will contractors handle the funding reductions? The clock is ticking. Congress has 4 months to agree on alternative cuts before sequestration becomes a reality. Find the latest news at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by myself and my colleague Jason Miller, and we are up two on the countdown.
Number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by my colleague Jason Miller, shutdown averted but fiscal cliff awaits. And this is a story on federalnewsradio.com. The shutdown is avoided, thank heavens, because, boy, if we were to go through another season of government shutdown.
Yes, the clock is up.
And the tickers and all of that jazz. I just didn't need to do that all over again. And I'm only the one who has to cover it, let alone live under that kind of axe swinging over your neck.
It gives us plenty of web hits. That's about the best thing for us.
Yeah.
People listening.
So this goes away. The House has passed the continuing resolution that will last through the end of March. The Senate is expected to do the same thing very, very shortly. The president will sign it, and we'll have numbers very similar to what we have now. Now, it does appear that there's a little bit of leeway in these, in this continuing resolution, that it's not the pure continuing resolution in the historic sense, which says we're just going to continue doing exactly what we're doing today for this period of time. There are some differences here.
I want to actually go and definitely talk about the differences, but before I do that, let me go back to the point we were making it before break. Does Congress ever learn? Well, here's a good example of maybe Congress learning a little bit. The saying, well, we had these fights, you know, last year and the, you know, in previous years, and even though I think the election obviously plays the big role into the fact that they decided to just kind of figure a way to make this work without getting into the big fight. I think that's actually a very positive sign. Now, what happens come January, come February, when they have to relook at this again and figure out what they're going to do for the next 6 months after March 27th? That could be a whole different thing, and then we could put the shutdown clock back up, and we could get the shutdown, you know, announcers going together, warm them up. But I think that in the meantime, they made a smart decision, and they seem to either A, listen to the agencies a little bit, or B, understood based on hearings that there's certain areas that definitely need more money. And I think I'd like to point out two of them. Obviously, cyber tax is a big one, but also the processing of veteran disability claims. They kind of took that, they just realized that, hey, VA definitely needs some more help because these claims are only going to grow up and not go down over the next, you know, year.
The idea of Congress doing this, I mentioned yesterday in my industry chatter show, that there seems to be two schools of thought about this continuing resolution getting done in this manner. One of them is, oh, this is a good sign. Republican House, Democratic Senate agreed, and nobody did any funny business to throw this off. So each leader on each side was able to get everybody together pretty much. This passed the House 329-91. That's pretty convincing. And so one school of thought says that's a great sign. That means that when we come back for the lame duck session, and then regardless of what the election looks like in January when leaders get back together, there's hope. There is the possibility that something can finally get done. The other school of thought seems to be that this is a total anomaly, that this is completely weird, and that we're going to go back to business as usual as soon as the election is over.
I think it depends on who wins the election what happens in the election more than anything else. I mean, you know, you figure if there's a Republican Congress and a Republican president, well, you know, they'll still have trouble getting 60 votes in the Senate because I don't think the Senate's going to flip that much.
Correct.
But at the same time, but I think that this is a good sign. I'll tell you from watching the Congress over the years, I don't have high expectations. I don't think the world's going to change, but I think that this was an important thing for it to happen. I think people realized that a government shutdown, nobody wins, and especially the government employees don't win. And I think that there's some, you know, kind of reconciliation that, hey, we got to be smarter about this and not stick to our guns so hard on this one issue. The other piece is it also puts to rest, I think, and eases the minds of both federal employees and contractors about what's going to happen over the next 6 months. Now, we still have sequestration. There's a big report came out today. I think we're going to talk about that next. But
thanks for blowing the ending. I'm just teasing.
It was obvious.
It is the biggest thing out there right now.
Not for me, though, by the way. Well, mine is still the fiscal cliff.
But, you know, these are connected. I mean,
they absolutely are.
The idea of sequestration and the idea of what's happening with the continuing resolution are really a lot more tied together than I think people believe than people see on first glance.
Absolutely. I mean, if the government shuts down, obviously then sequestration doesn't really matter. But at the same time, you know what you're going to, you at least know what your spending is going to look like. Now you also know what, if sequestration happens, what your spending will look like. So, and that's I think it's something like a 9.4% change for DOD and something to the effect of, I think 8% or something for civilian agencies.
We'll get more into the numbers in the next segment, but the idea is, the reason I think that these concepts are equally important is that at the end of it, at the core of all of these conversations is the same thing. What do we do to fix the financial health of the United States government and the United States citizenry? Well,
but they're punting forward on the CR. I mean, that's not really fixing anything.
No, I agree with you 100%.
They're spending more money, and in fact, they are five or six areas. So.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right about that. But tracking that and paying attention to that is what's really at the core of both of these issues, whether it's the continuing resolution or the sequestration issue. Now, on the continuing resolution, something that our colleague Tom Temin pointed out when it comes to the pay freeze is if we get to a situation where at the end of March the president is able to put through the 0.5% increase that he wants to give people, at that point in time, Tom points out, it'll really in reality only be 0.25%.
Well, they'll make it retroactive. That's the history has shown.
Yes, history has shown that.
Yes.
It's not a guarantee, though.
No.
And I think we've seen a lot of things in the last year to 18 months in Congress where historic precedent was this, and what we actually saw happen was something else. So I agree with you on a factual basis that history has shown that that's the case, but I'm not sure about the retroactivity part.
I think that the administration would get, you know, they've already kind of come under a lot of fire from federal employee groups, the unions, and the federal employees themselves. I think that if they don't make it retroactive, and Tom is right, and they only give it, you really end up with a 0.25% raise, that's even going to be more disconcerting, more depressing for these employees. And especially if President Obama wins a second term, which we'll know by March, that's not going to start off on the best foot either. So I think there's a couple reasons why he would want to get that retroactive.
Here is a passage in your story, which is headlined, "Shutdown Averted, But Fiscal Cliff Awaits," your choice for the most important story of the week, that gets at the crux of the frustration that I hear from folks in the agencies, but I think is the case for people across the country. "Passage of the continuing resolution is likely to be Congress's last major act before members go home to campaign for reelection." We hear today from the majority leader in the House, Eric Cantor of Virginia, that they're going to be in, I think, 3 days next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Of course, if they're in Friday, they're going to be in for all day Friday. It'll be probably a half day. They'll be out by one or so in the afternoon. And then that's it. They're not coming back till after the election on the House side. So we essentially have three more days of work for this year. You did a story back in July where you were tracking, then we were counting down, we were in the
23 days
in the low 20s at that point. Now we're down to three, and yet there is still a lot to be done and a lot of pressure on agencies to do things with not necessarily any guidance on how to do them.
Well, I think that there's a lot of expectation that the lame duck session, a lot of these issues will be taken up, because there'll be a lot less pressure on the members, especially those who lose and those who win, to say, okay, now I can vote where I don't have to worry about someone throwing it back at me at the election. So I think that's the main reason why there's 3 days left in the at least House side of the legislative session for this time around. And, you know, the members, they have to get reelected. I mean, that's their goal, really. I mean, you'd think their goal is to pass bills and govern, but unfortunately, the way things are set up is it's about getting reelected. And I think that they realize that, that the best thing for everybody to avoid the nastiness is to wait for the lame duck session.
You and I were joking before we went on the air that we are starting now to get avalanched with all of the emails about continuing resolution. Every organization that has an interest, all members of Congress and so on, are all putting out emails about the passage of the CR, whether it's good or bad or what the deal is. It's really amazing how quickly things can move in this town. Jason Miller's most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is "Shutdown Averted But Fiscal Cliff Awaits," and you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Most important federal news story of the week by my choice is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro DC.
I'm looking to
move up in my career,
make my mark in government,
keep my job, and still earn my degree. Earning my Master's of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University's global campus gave me direction in my career in public service. The instructors were more like mentors. They helped me to hone in on exactly what it is that I wanted to do.
The possibilities are endless. With an NASPAA accredited MPA degree from Central Michigan University's global campus, the gold standard degree for government and nonprofit careers. Get it all at CMU's 7 local centers, Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro DC. Call 877-679-1268 or go online at cmich.edu/MetroDC.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
What is the strategic vision for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE? How is it pursuing innovative enforcement strategies and becoming more efficient and effective? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with John Morton, Director of ICE, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. My colleague Jason Miller and I count the stories down, and I do want to plug again the fact that next week, as part of our special series, The Obama Impact, where we're looking at the impact of the administration over the past 4 years, the Federal News Countdown is going to feature two people who are experts in the world of the federal government, as we do every week. But in particular, they're going to be choosing and counting down the three most important changes that the administration has made and how, based on how likely they are to embed themselves into the fabric of the federal government, to really become part of the way the federal government does things.
And to be clear, it's performance management type of things.
Yes.
It's not political, obviously.
Correct.
And it's also not the idea of, well, they, you know, change the curtains at the...
That's right. These are going to be substantive management issues.
Right.
And the way that those have been implemented and the way that they have been done so that they stick around.
That's going to be tough to pick three. I can think of one definitely. Two and three will be tough to say what's going to stick. Because I'm not sure if something like, and let's just for talking sake, say hiring reform, is that something that, you know, is that really a management initiative? I mean, it is. It's fixing a problem, but then, you know, you got to ask the question, there are so many others out there. So that's going to be a great conversation.
And that's next week at this time on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. My selection for the most important federal news story of this week is Jack Moore's story, which is just breaking this afternoon. The headline is White House Warns of Deeply Destructive Cuts in Sequestration Report. The White House is releasing this report today. It's linked up on federalnewsradio.com. This is the report required by the Sequestration Transparency Act, where the president had to detail what his vision was, what the White House's vision is for sequestration, what it would look like. And Jack writes, the $109 billion in cuts coming next year, split evenly between defense and civilian agency budgets, would cut defense discretionary spending by 9.4% and civilian agency spending by 8.2%. Most mandatory or direct spending is exempt from sequestration. Medicare is not exempt, but it's limited to a 2% reduction. Other non-defense mandatory programs not exempt from sequestration will face a 7.6% cut, while mandatory defense spending subject to a 10% reduction. There are a ton of numbers there, and me reading them is probably not the best way to consume them. So I do recommend that you go to federalnewsradio.com and read Jack's story. It's right at the top of our homepage.
And if you have insomnia tonight, you can read the 360-some-odd page report that OMB put out, too. I got a chance to look at it, and it's the detail is there. I mean, it is. It's not necessarily always easy to understand, but OMB goes agency by agency and program by program and says, are they subject to sequestration, yes or no? And if so, what's their budget? And then what's the reduction? And you get real numbers. You get, you know, the program's worth $330 million. It's a 7.6% cut. Therefore, they will lose, you know, X amount of millions of dollars. It's fascinating. I'm not sure it's the right word. It's scary is maybe the better word. But, OMB was charged with this idea of being more transparent. Well, there it is for you, 360-odd pages.
It will be interesting to see as we learn more about this, as more of the people that we talk to who are experts in these areas really plow through this, to see if the general consensus holds that I have been hearing about this, which was it's not the number, it's not the amount of the cuts, it's the idea that they would be across the board. And I wonder if now that we see exactly what the administration's talking about, if that might change.
From what I've seen, it is across the board just because you can see the percentages applied to each program. But we have that linked up on federalnewsradio.com.
The entire report is there, as well as all of the stories that Jason and I counted down. Thanks very much for coming in on the show today.
Always a pleasure
having you on.
Always fun.
The Federal News Countdown is every week at this time, the 3 o'clock hour on Friday. All the stories posted on federalnewsradio.com. And hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.